From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 18th day of January 2017. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jerry Goodell at Price Futures Group in Chicago. The folks at the Anderson's Climbers facility outside of Logansport, Indiana, they make ethanol there, will join us to take a look at the cash grain market. We'll discuss the weather forecast, too, with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. The heavy rains have stopped in Argentina. Now it's going to get hot. But does that really mean that their soybean crop has been hurt substantially? He'll have more on that, and we'll also take up this morning's cabinet-level administration confirmation hearing for Scott Pruitt to be head of US EPA right here on this Wednesday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this 18th day of January. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by Jerry Goodell. He's at Price Futures Group out of Chicago. Jerry, thanks for being with us this afternoon. Hope things are going well with you.
Yes, very well. Todd, I'm glad you gave me a call.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what's been happening in the marketplace over the weekend. A lot of rainfall in Argentina that drove the market higher on the idea that there were some flooded acres, some remembrance of last year, though that came much later in the season than now. And then we followed up today, I think, for at least a while, and we didn't end nearly as high as we were at midday on idea that weather was going to be hot there. Are there other things that I missed along the way?
That's generally the big scenario there. There was also some kind of building situation over the weekend and through yesterday where they had a blockade going on in some of the major roads in Brazil that would maybe slow down some shipments of some of that early Mato Grosso harvest. But that seemed to be adjusted about midday, around noon or so, where there was reports that the authorities had decided that the blockades were not there anymore, and so that changed a little bit. I don't know if that had anything to do with the profit-taking that happened late in the session. Like you, it was kind of an interesting day considering the fact that we've had such a good, strong market. Sometimes we have kind of a little pause in here and then maybe get fired up towards the weekend or worry about exports later in the week, but it stayed strong today, but I think it really gets back to the reality that people are very, very sensitive about South America after last year's dramatic changes that occurred late in the season.
You think they should be? Do we know enough about their growing season and how it progresses, or learned enough here in recent years, for instance, 2015, and having really wet conditions, that we should be very concerned about it, or is there not so much of a reason?
Well, in the South America, particularly in Argentina, their soils are not as forgiving. In Argentina, I'd have to say it's a soil type, particularly as flat as it is, where there's a lot. Once it gets wet, it's a very slow recovery from that conditions and that. I don't know. I throw it on the concept as a peat bog type of mentality. I don't know if that's it or not. That's just more of a something we can visualize. From that point, on the other side of the question, over on the Brazilian side of the things, they're in the need for more constant moisture all the way along. And instead of having that inch that we can get by with in the Midwest here, they tend to need more like an inch and a half or 2 inches on a pretty regular basis on that side of the ledger. So we've got two different types of soils. And I think that's really the important factor in here, is the fact that we've had a very regular type of moisture that's really prevented plantings and also drowned out plains. As we all know, soybeans are not a crop that does well after it sits in a set of water for any length of time.
Yeah, I've got a quick question for you. Price Futures Group, are you located in the Chicago Board of Trade complex there still?
Yes.
Okay, so then this is the question I have for you, just because I suspect you see traders in the halls and other parts of the building and probably talk to them quite a bit anyway. Do they have any concerns about the inauguration on Friday and the impact a change in administration might or might not have on trade?
They definitely recognize some of the general commentary that's been thrown out by the new administration and its new president. I think there's an attitude that there's that the trade situation on the agricultural side, maybe not so much as an impact there as it may be on some of the other things that Mr. Trump's focus is on, from manufacturing to autos to those types of things. I think the interesting thing is, I guarantee the agricultural community is hoping that he does have some sensitivity to this because of the fact that it's a huge part of our markets.
Right. Okay, so let's move back on to the marketplace itself. What are you telling producers about old and new crop, both corn and soybeans?
Well, I've been generally kind of hanging on my corn for quite some time here, since we've had very bad basis levels, and then also the futures have not been all that spiffy since last summer. We've come back into the general range here, and actually we're close to the 369 highs that we kind of had on the March back in that bounce period that we had there in July after the rains that occurred in late June and early July. And that's definitely a highly important area. And so if somebody hasn't done much marketing, I would be a minor marketer. But in general, I'm still more optimistic about what could happen to prices on corn because of the declining plantings this coming year, and particularly some kind of weather issues. We've had a lot more volatile weather all the way around the world. And you listen to some people, we could still have a warm and hot summer this year that we might have missed last year in the corn. Soybeans, a little different story here. Definitely been marketing along some beans to keep everybody in business. I put out a report, I think you might have seen, Todd, that I was interested in bringing some more sales in here in this 1070 to 1080 range. And lo and behold, we're right here. There is a possibility that this thing might stretch out maybe up to the 95 zone. I don't think we're going to see $11 here on this emotions we've got right now. Yes, there's some concerns, and I'm concerned about what this is, but I think a lot of it's already been in. There's been a lot more talk. We were at 56, 57, and that was a lot more 50, 52 in the market, and I think that's a pretty good area. It might even actually improve a little bit if things straightened out and actually dry out a little bit here on Argentina's output. And so definitely, you know, this is a pretty significant rally here since the, you know, going into the report, and even since the report, we've had a nice recovery here in values back to the highs we've seen in recent times. So it's always good to reward markets in these kind of times when definitely until we can really see something major happening around the world in weather, you don't want to assume that this is going to be going on forever. So you want to take advantage of these swings.
And finally, anything out of the report, the numbers that you saw that you found of great interest?
Well, it's interesting the fact, as you and I talked back in the fall here about these markets, or about the reports that we're getting from some of these Eastern Corn Belt things, definitely lots of optimism about the beans, very good yields in that area. The corn side, some people just did not have the sparkling yields that they had a couple of years ago. Finally, on the final numbers here, they took, four bushels off Illinois, went back to 198 or for 202. They took five bushels out of Indiana, reduced to Ohio, the whole eastern area, and also to some extent even the whole eastern U.S. because of the heat and the hurricanes and stuff like that. But the other side of the coin, we had some fabulous yields that I stare at, 159 in North Dakota. I wonder if we're ever going to see that yield in the next few years ahead. That's just an unbelievable 20 bushels or 25 bushels over their previous record. Great yields in Iowa and Minnesota. So on the corn side of things, quite a disparity in the late season yield numbers there between the two sides from there. And I guess the other real interesting factor is there is we had such a huge decline in three states in winter wheat seedings. There's lots of talk that that's going to be a huge jump in soybean plantings. Boy, Oklahoma and Texas are not – I know there's going to be more beans down there, but are there going to end up being 500,000 more acres of beans in Oklahoma and Texas? While those two states' yields go down – or, excuse me, plantings go down, and that was 1.5 million nearly in Kansas. those are three states that had the big jump decline. I'd say there's 1 million acres coming out of that general area down there, but that would be my top side. So those are some interesting numbers I see.
As Jerry Goodell of the Price Futures Group out of Chicago joins us on the Closing Market Report for this Wednesday afternoon. In today's agricultural news, Donald Trump's choice to lead the Environmental Protection Agency is before the Senate Committee on Environment and Public Works today. The confirmation hearing for Scott Pruitt covered a lot of ground, but was clearly dominated by corn state senators from both sides of the aisle wanting assurances Pruitt would support the renewable fuel standard. The Oklahoman, not quite trusted because of his oil state roots, said he would follow the intent of Congress.
It's not the job of the administrator of the EPA to do anything other than administer the program according to the intent of Congress, and I commit to you to do so.
And you
and
also
the waiver, and I would say this, the waivers that routinely are offered by the administrator, recently another waiver was offered, it should be used judiciously. There's a reason why Congress put in that statute those statutory objectives. The market has changed since 2005, and the waiver authority that's been provided by this body is important. But that waiver authority should be used judiciously, and the act should be complied with and enforced consistent with the will of Congress.
Which includes the authority of the EPA administrator to adjust the yearly volumes of each type of biofuel. Authority Scott Pruitt, if confirmed as EPA head, seizes both congressional intent and rule of law. Well, let's stay in Washington, D.C., and with the Trump administration, it is expected to fill its final cabinet seat, possibly before Inauguration Day, which is Friday. Interviews are ongoing as of yesterday, according to those close to the process. That came despite another false report yesterday, of course, that former Georgia Governor Sonny Perdue was to be named Ag Secretary. Perdue may still be in the running, but the selection process continues and other candidates are being considered. Incoming Vice President Mike Pence over the weekend said it's very possible the cabinet will be filled before Friday. When leaving the Department of Agriculture last week, former Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack criticized the incoming administration for delaying the selection of a nominee for the position. Vilsack thinks the delay will make it difficult for the next USDA leader to hit the ground running. Speaking of Mr. Vilsack, he has a new job. He'll join the U.S. Dairy Export Council. Vilsack will become its CEO at the beginning of next month. More from Washington, D.C., and meetings that have taken place, this time with Bayer and Monsanto. Bayer Ag has promised U.S. President-elect Donald Trump that the Bayer-Monsanto merger, if it comes into being, will bring billions of dollars in research and development spending in the U.S. and make a significant commitment to creating jobs. Trump's transition team confirmed a deal was reached between Trump and Bayer despite the agreement still being analyzed by regulatory authorities. Incoming White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer said Bayer has committed to $8 billion in new U.S. research and development. Bayer will also keep 100% of Monsanto's 9,000-plus U.S. workforce and add 3,000 new U.S. high-tech jobs. And finally today, back to where we started with the RFS. The chairman of the House Environment Panel wants to ensure that the renewable fuel standard, key for the ethanol industry, continues after the current law expires in 2022. But to do that, John Shimkus expects sacrifices from both RFS supporters and opponents. The Illinois Republican says getting the renewable fuel standard reauthorized will mean neither side gets everything at once.
What we need to do is to craft a bill in which there's a little bit of skin off of all parties that can get a large vote that the corn senators and the renewable senators see this as a good option to make sure there's certainty past 2022.
Meanwhile, those opposed to the RFS also expect to get something out of the deal.
We may need to manipulate those standards set in 2007. Not to great extent, but to do that. Now, I think the close observers to this in Washington are kind of scratching their heads. Yeah, they know what President-elect Trump said, but you also have now the EPA supposed administrator, Mr. Pruitt, who's been on both sides, has had good meetings with corn senators, but also is more well-known for oil and gas.
Well, Shimkus argues there's not a clear official stance by the administration. Renewing the RFS law would provide certainty after 2022, and unlike the outgoing administration that backtracked on RFS volume targets in 2016, Shimkus hopes the Trump team will follow Congress's intent. He argues Republicans won't stand for anything less from a GOP administration. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Coming up next, we'll explore more from the Monsanto side, just exactly what a Bayer Monsanto transition might look like and how it could impact innovation for agriculture in the United States. Michael Clements of the National Association of Farm Broadcasting has more.
Combined, Bayer and Monsanto will help growers to optimize integrated solutions and improve on-farm profitability and sustainability by offering an expanded variety of more precisely targeted seed and crop inputs. Rob Fraley, Monsanto Executive Vice President and Chief Technology Officer, describes how the combination will benefit farmers.
First of all, the two companies are very complementary. Monsanto is focused on seeds and traits and data science, and Bayer's focused on crop chemicals. So the combination really brings tools together that are going to allow us to increase, I think, the pace and scope of research and being able to develop new products for farmers.
Fraley says the combination will allow for more investment in research, allowing the combined company to accelerate research into different crops like wheat. Monsanto currently invests near $1.5 billion in research and development, and Fraley says the combined company will spend even more, providing farmers with new technology quicker.
In the area of herbicide tolerance, to develop a new trait, it takes a company 8 or 10 years to develop the new herbicide. It takes another 8 to 10 years to develop a new trait. I see one of the real benefits of the combination with Bayer is the minute that new chemistry is discovered, we'll start working on those new traits and breeding them. And I think that can dramatically cut down the time that it takes to bring those next generation products to farmers. And doing this together in parallel will shave years off of the development cycle.
Fraley says farmers are eager to see the benefits the Bayer-Monsanto combination will provide. To hear more of Dr. Fraley's thoughts on the Bayer-Monsanto combination, follow Dr. Fraley on Twitter, at Rob Fraley. Michael Clements reporting.
Michael Clements is from the National Association of Farm Broadcasting. He's located in Kansas City, Missouri. Rob Fraley is a vice president and lead technology officer for Monsanto Company based out of St. Louis. You can also learn more directly from Dr. Fraley, if you'd like, at the Illinois Soybean Summit in Peoria. There are two of them this year, one in Effingham and one in Peoria. I'll be hosting the event in Peoria. That's the 16th day of February. And Dr. Fraley will be one of the speakers at that particular event. He will not be in Effingham. You can get yourself registered right now for the Soybean Summit in Peoria if you'd like at ilsoy, that's illinoisoy.org. This is the closing market report from Illinois Public Media on the 18th day of January. I'm Yehovah Extension's Todd Gleason. Drew Lerner is here from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Drew, over the weekend, Argentina received a great deal of rainfall, a lot of flooding, more rainfall in the forecast there, I think, or at least there was. However, things are changing. Can you tell me about conditions on the ground or what you believe has happened so far and what may in the short and long run?
Yeah, you know, if we go back and we look at the U.S. weather, the only time we saw serious losses in production in the U.S. from flooding was in 1993. Now, we've had local areas that have been flooded and lost crops, but, you know, the big picture where we lose just tremendous amounts of production over a very large area is really hard to achieve. And I think kind of the same thing is occurring right now in Argentina. We definitely have some serious flooding there. I am not here to discount that. But I think that we need to wave a little bit of a caution flag here that maybe we're caught up in making this a little bit more of a bigger deal than it really is. Looking at the data that we collect every day, most of this serious flooding missed all of the regular reporting weather stations. So that already suggests that it's a smaller area. Now, I don't want to make it sound like it's not too wet in Argentina, because it is. It is very wet, and there is a lot of water standing around. And they've had a very rough growing season, and without any question, they're going to have lower production. But I think some of these comments have been made recently about how big the losses are probably a little out of line. If we go back and look at the serious flooding that occurred last year, some of the comments made here recently is that the actual damage that occurred to the crop from that serious flooding was less than half of what it was originally advertised to be, maybe even as little as a third of what it was. And I think we'll probably see something similar to that here with this particular round. In the meantime, we're done with the rain in Argentina. There will be hardly any rain at all in the flood area for at least the next 10 days. Temperatures will get very warm to hot as we move towards the weekend and stay that way all next week.
So that's one of the things that futures have been reacting to. How hot is very hot?
Well, temperatures will be in the middle 90s through the lower 100s. We'll probably see temperatures 95 to maybe 108 for the absolute hottest temperature, and that will occur in the northwest, though. And remember, now we do have all this moisture on the ground and in the ground. So when that heat tries to occur, it's going to bring that moisture out. We're going to have high humidity. It's going to be difficult to get very many areas in the heart of the corn and soybean country to get very far over 100. It'll come up in the upper 90s near 100, but I think a lot of those areas will stop right about there. That's still hot. It's still going to be stressful for livestock. It's still going to stress some of the crops out there. It's not a pretty picture, but the good thing is that it will help to evaporate moisture quickly and perhaps give us an opportunity to allow for runoff to occur. And so the potential there is fairly good that we may see improving conditions eventually.
First crop soybeans in Mato Grosso are coming off. What are harvest conditions like?
Very good. Very good. I think most of Brazil in general seeing some really good weather. Now, in Brazil, it's normal for it to rain through the harvest season. It's just a question of whether it's real heavy and frequent rain or whether it's just a periodic light rainfall. In this case, Mato Grosso will continue to see a good mix of rain and sunshine, and their progress rate will likely occur normally. It will rain a little bit too often in Sao Paulo and neighboring areas there in southern Minas Gerais and northern portions of Paraná, and these areas will probably have a little more of a harvest delay and some question as to how good the crop will be, but it should break down after a little while. So I think we're going to be okay in general. I still think Brazil has a tremendous crop on its hands.
Thank you so much for taking the time with me today.
Have a great afternoon.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. I'm Todd Gleason.